Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Welcome everybody to the show today. I am super excited because I have a return guest, Lisa Ziegler from Cool Flower, who wrote the book Cool Flowers, How to Grow and Enjoy Long Blooming Hardy Annual Flowers Using Cool Weather Techniques, is back with us today. She was my guest number two back in January when I very first started recording, and I was probably so nervous that day. I probably was just looking at the garage band going, I hope it's still going. And well, welcome back today, Lisa.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
And so today, one of the reasons I asked Lisa if she would come back is because I ordered her book and read it this summer and just learned a ton. And then also what I don't think I picked up on when we were talking, because I was so nervous, was that actually this is the time to be planting a lot of flowers for people. And one of my listeners had asked me about fall planting, so I reached out and said, would you come back on? And so here you are.
Sure, great. We'd love to talk about all this good stuff with you.
Okay.
And it really depends on where you are and your winter hardiness. You know, limited planting in the fall up where it's, you know, in zone 3 and 4, but there are still a couple of things, and but there's other options also. So I'd love to discuss them all with you.
Okay. So I'm in zone 4, 5, like on the border there, I think. So but I still think I'm going to try to plant some things. And especially one of the things that's inspired me is how much stuff we have that comes back. So I'm thinking, is that a good sign?
Exactly. For things that reseed themselves and those seeds come back the next year, in fact, yes, that is an excellent sign. And I'll say that I've learned so much about flowers and even vegetables that really are hardy annuals, meaning they'll reseed themselves, survive the winter, and come back. Because of the way that they've performed in my garden, there's really no documentation to back it up. But yeah, you're exactly right. If they're coming back on their own in your garden, it's a go for it, in my book.
Mm-hmm. And then, so then the other question I've been wondering, so it was like, when they go to seed, is that the time if I was going to try to put fresh seeds in? Like, let's say like my I guess the thing that I have the most of is calendulas. So if I was going to try to actually seed some calendulas in some places that I actually really wanted them to go on, grow on purpose, is that when I do it, when they actually go to seed on their own?
Yes. And so really taking your cues from Mother Nature, of when you start seeing some of these little seedlings pop up in your garden, is a great time to sow seeds. Now, I would be very surprised if calendula would winter over for you. I think we occasionally, if I don't select my spot, I'm in zone 7, and if I don't place our calendula in a semi-protected spot and then we have a really tough winter, which we have had the last 2 years, we'll lose calendula. Because typically, here's what happens when you plant in the fall. I mean, the whole point of fall planting is to plant the seed in time for the little seed to germinate and become a little teeny transplant in the ground that'll go through winter and survive, so that it will harbor this great root system that has a head start when spring comes around next year. So if you were to plant those calendulas, when you've seen calendula reseed in your garden, do you actually see plants, little transplants, show their heads in fall, or do you see those in spring?
I don't know. I haven't paid attention yet. I'll have to look.
Okay. Those are the things you need to look for.
Okay.
So there are some things that you could plant in the fall that'll germinate, that will winter through. They really are winter hardy, even up to zone 4. A couple even to zone 3, I think. So that's the kind of stuff you need to start taking note of. And, you know, looking around your garden now, in Cool Flowers, we do show photos of what the different plants that are listed in the book. There's over 30 hardy annuals. What the baby plant looks like. So you can go out in your garden and root around looking to see if you have any of these reseeded guys of things you've planted in the past. And if, in fact, you do have some reseeded, then you'll have to wait and see. Are they still there in the spring? You know, did they make it through the summer? Through the winter, sorry. Because, as I said, it was really tough for me when I was researching this book. I've practiced this for over 20 years here on our flower farm. But when it came time for me to have backup documentation to put it in a book, I started researching hardy annuals. Well, I had to go to books that were published before the 1950s, most often, to find books that actually talked about doing what I'm talking about in this book. I didn't discover this great way of gardening. Our grandmothers did it. I've just kind of rekindled the idea. So there's not a lot of backup documentation, and I think there's probably 2 to 3 times as many hardy annuals that'll do what I talk about in Cool Flowers that we just don't have documentation, which I'm working on now. You know, we're trying to find more and more that follow this practice.
Cool. So, I'm just kind of thinking if listeners have any kind of documentation, they could maybe let you know and contact you if anybody out there's been, you know, recording any kind of that kind of thing.
Sure. Well, and yeah, and it's you know, something certainly I'd love to, you know, you can go to our website and shoot me an email if you've had an experience with something. And so it's just, there's just a lack of information there. You know, the best book that really had a lot of information that I actually bought it at a garage sale for 50 cents. Are you believing it? It was the Better Homes and Garden book, published 1951. And it talks about, you know, sowing sweet peas, you know, and in December and larkspur with, you know, I mean, it was like what we've been doing here on our farm. And it was just great to have a little bit of confirmation that, yes, in fact, what we're doing has been done before and is widely practiced by people. And I was not raised in a real gardening home. You know, my mom and dad had a landscape, but they didn't garden. But folks that come from, you know, moms and grandmas and grandpas that had them out in the garden as little kids saw a lot of this. Those people have been doing this. But those of us that are just coming on to gardening perhaps have missed out on what I consider to be the greatest part of gardening is the spring bloomers. They're just so wonderful and beautiful.
Okay. Well, tell us some more about your place then.
Sure. Well, I am I'm on the coast of Virginia, not right. I'm about 30 minutes from the ocean. And so I'm not right along the coast, but we live on a peninsula. I'm in Newport News, Virginia. And it's a great region. We have 4 seasons here. Our winters aren't anything like yours up there in Montana, but we do fall down to single digits in the wintertime. We do get a little bit of snow, not much. And that's what makes perhaps growing hardy annuals sometimes for us a little difficult. Snow actually is a layer of insulation. So if you plant stuff out in your garden that's hardy and you get snow and keep snow through the winter, they're in fact kind of insulated there. Versus with us, I plant stuff and then it's, you know, 9 degrees and 12 degrees blowing wind with no protection. So our winters are tough here, but we also have very hot and humid summers. So many of the flowers that are in Cool Flowers, a lot of those of us that live, I will say, in the bottom half of the country, where we do have these heat events in the summer, think we can't even grow these flowers. And those are the folks that are living in zones, you know, 6, 7, and 8 that really benefit from the fall planting, because we can't grow these flowers typically in our region without fall planting. Now, I want to say here, just in case I get away from it, the really big benefit to folks that are up where you are, zone 4, zone 5, and even the colder regions of zone 6. While there are some things you can plant in the fall, the really bonus to you guys is that all of the plants and cool flowers, all the hardy annuals, can be planted in what I call very early spring. That is about 6 to 8 weeks before your last frost date. When is your last frost date, Jackie?
In June. Ours is like June 1st, I think.
Okay. So you have to wait a really long time to start planting out summer annuals, which are things like zinnias and sunflowers and tomatoes and those warm lovers. Flowers that are in cool flowers can actually be planted 6 to 8 weeks before that June 1st date. So while, you know, people are standing, I often use the example of while all your friends are standing at the door clutching their zinnia packets, which can't be planted until it warms up, you know, you're out enjoying and planting hardy annuals. So these are the flowers that you guys can be planting in April and May while it's still cold. There might even be snow on the ground. So everybody can plant them then. So these really give you something to go. So we plant here where I am fall and spring. My farm is located in the middle of the city. I'm the last farmer in our city. I have 200,000, I call them watchers, residents. You know, that's how big our city is. It's me and the rest of them. And that creates challenges, but it also gives me a lot of benefits. And after doing it, I've been farming since 1998, and we have kind of worked out all those types of kinks. And we sell our flowers. My farm is only 3 acres. My garden is only an acre and a half. And we produce about 10 to 15,000 stems of flowers a week in high season, which is about 5 months out of the year. And so you can grow a lot in a very small space. We're totally organic. We're not certified, but we follow organic practices. And we sell all of our flowers to florists. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Colonial Williamsburg, which is a huge historical tourist spot here. We sell to them, and we sell to a couple of supermarkets. So it keeps us really, really busy, out of season. You know, I write books and travel and lecture, and my sister and I do a lot of garden, master gardener events, garden club events, because we also have an online garden store where we sell the stuff that we use. And so that's kind of what keeps us busy year-round. So they can visit our website, and, I mean, we have how-to videos, blogs, our store where you can buy seeds and cool flowers. And so we kind of have our fingers into a lot of pie, but that's what keeps it a lot of fun for us.
I was looking at that one picture of you and the tractor, and maybe it's your sister's, and you're laying on the ground, and I was thinking that's because you're the most tired, because I don't know how you do everything that you do.
You are just so busy. Yeah, I'm not that busy all the time. And I have to tell you about that picture. That was the cover of our catalog for this year, 2015. And that was, we're always every year thinking, oh, we've got to get a great catalog picture. And we're always trying and trying. Well, that particular day, it was like 100 degrees. And it was just, that's Suzanne sitting on the tractor, I think she is my sister Suzanne. And then the other person is Bobo, who has worked with us for years and years here. He's a longtime friend. And we were getting ready to bring that trailer of flowers into the building. And I said, oh, look how beautiful that trailer is. Quick, let's take a photo. And my sister we set up the tripod. I mean, she took the picture. So I dive onto the ground, and Suzanne hits the button and runs and jumps on the tractor, and there you go. So that's kind of, you know, fun.
All right. It does look, it looks great. So that's on the cover to your seed catalog, or also can buy tools there?
Sure. We don't sell a huge variety of tools and supplies. We strictly sell the tools that we use, the tools and the supplies that we use. And we do not save seeds, but when I buy seeds from a seed house and hybridizers, we buy extra and package them and are able to put our own instructions on the seed packets. We find that, and it's getting much better, but oftentimes seed packets are a little vague in their instructions on how to get the seeds to actually germinate. So we try to provide that information. So we package seeds, the same seeds that we plant on our farm, and we sell primarily cut flower seeds. And so we sell seeds, supplies, of course my books and DVDs and all that type of stuff. And a lot of supplies you don't find out on the open market. It's stuff that flower farmers use that make gardening just easier. And we mail our catalog once a year. It usually goes out in late January, early February. And so if any of your listeners want to get a catalog and get on our mailing list, they can just go to our website. Our email address is at the top. Just put in the subject line, catalog list, and send me their name and mail and address, and we'd be happy to add them and mail them a copy of our catalog. And I will tell you, we are.
Say the website one more time.
Sure. The website is thegardenersworkshop.com. And if you're having trouble, just Google the Gardener's Workshop, and it'll come up. And we already have our cover for the 2016 catalog, and I'll tell you, it's a good one. It is really good.
Oh, so that was the cover from last year. So the cover
Correct.
For next year is a surprise?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Okay, and then I didn't mean to cut you off, but just always good That's to right. have that in there, because I know when I'm listening to a podcast or if they go to the show, I don't know, it's just good to have it extra. But you were going to say something else. We were talking about, let's see, what was for sale and what tools you use and the seed packets with the instructions.
Yeah, so we just try to, I find me personally, if you go to shop for something and you have 15 choices and they all do the same kind of job, mm-hmm. you don't know which one to buy. And so we have held true to our commitment to really just sell the things that we use. Like, we sell one type of stand-up hoe. We sell one hand hoe, you know, because those are the two tools. Those are our two most popular tools. And the way that we do start seeds, you know, those are what we use every day here on our farm. And and people appreciate that. We think we've really hit a niche that way because people are just very, it just helps them out immensely.
That's what I was going to say is that, all right, so when I was reading the book this morning and kind of reviewing my notes from when I read it this summer, I was going through the appendix. And so, like, my husband's been bugging me to get him the floating row cover for years. And I actually finally saw some when I went on a tour of the Lower Valley Farm down in Kalispell. So I kind of saw what it looked like in action. But your book, you actually said the weight that you use and explained it. And I appreciated that part a lot. Because you don't really see that much. So that's what I was thinking about when you were saying that. And then the other thing I was writing back here, just kind of as a side note, was I like the part about the Christmas presents. Because I'm one of those September start thinking about, I always like to make homemade gifts for people. And this is the time people, I know other crafters are out there. If you're going to make quilts for people or sew things, or I'm sure people are thinking. And I like the part when you were talking about reseeding. An inexpensive and excellent gift for a gardening friend is to share seed heads from flowers that you grew.
Sure.
And you talked about writing the instructions on a paper lunch bag, gathering the seed heads, placing the bag, and tying a ribbon around it. And I just thought that was a great idea.
I think that so many of us that are in this gardening world have groups that we're a part of. And how fun would that be? To, you know, to be able to give every person in your garden club or in your master gardener group a brown paper bag with, you know, maybe even you have to put a picture on a ribbon, and so they know what they're getting, and to have something that they can go home and sew or save it for spring. So, yeah, I really, some of the best flowers that I grow were given to me that way 100 years ago, you know? So
yeah. Plus, if it's local, it's more likely to grow. Although I'm, of course, already thinking I'm going to put them in the mail too. So to friends and
relatives. Sure. I mean, I think we become so let's just say I live in the South. I mean, Virginia is the South. Those of us that live in the South, particularly people south of me, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Louisiana, Texas, there are things that people have told us forever we cannot grow because of where we live. Well, it's not that we can't grow them. It's that we've always planted them at the improper time, at the wrong time. It's all about timing. So, you know, there are very few things that folks, I mean, it's a little different for those people that live in the deep South, like the tip of Florida, where they just get no cool weather whatsoever. But the rest of us, you just have to figure out when the proper time is to plant that seed for you. It is obviously not the same for me as it is for you, because we're at very different latitudes and our seasons are different. But once you wrap your head around that, it's like, okay, if I want to grow, I'll tell you the classic that people tell me we can't grow are sweet peas. You know, sweet peas are that one flower that is so fragrant. It stirs up memories in people from their childhood because their grandmothers grew them like no other flower we've grown. I just was writing an article this morning about growing great sweet peas and talking about, I mean, it just moves people when they see and smell sweet peas about their grandparents. So, you know, everywhere I go and lecture, and they'll say, how did you grow those sweet peas? We can't grow sweet peas here. And I said, well, you can't grow sweet peas here if you plant them in the spring. But when we plant them in the fall, we grow sweet peas like weeds now. I mean, you can barely control them. And I'm not talking about the invasive perennial that some people are familiar with. I'm talking about the beautiful, fragrant sweet peas that we all want to grow. So the only difference between what I was doing and all these people that were experienced gardeners were doing was the timing of when we planted them. So timing is what it's really all about. I think it's going to open a door for people just to rethink things.
I think I can hear people's minds spinning already and just different ideas. And
it
I actually talked to somebody
life.
Else yesterday who's going to be, his episode will air next week, or maybe it aired this morning. And he's just a very forward-thinking visionary too. His name is Bob Quinn. And he's growing wheat and stuff.
Right.
But just, yeah, that there's solutions out there. It's just...
You just have to figure it out. And, you know, I think probably the number one reason that this group of flowers, you know, a hardy annual is a pansy. A pansy, a lot of people, that's the most recognized flower that people know are pansies. You know, I mean, they're just very, very common. Well, a pansy is a hardy annual. And, you know, this group of flowers, you know, snapdragon, sweet peas, Bells of Ireland, all these Queen Anne's lace, the calendulas that you were speaking of earlier, all these wonderful flowers, because their planting time does not fall into the busy retail cycle, they kind of fell off the map. You know, you shouldn't be buying them when we're all storming the garden centers. You know, for you guys, I'm sure that May is the month of garden center heaven. You know, everybody's storming out to go find their warm season annuals to plant. Well, that's too late for hardy annuals. And so the retailers just don't even offer this group. So that's why they've really fallen off. And I'll tell you, it is perhaps the most beautiful group of flowers. And there's also vegetables, by the way, that fall under the same practice. And, you know, we miss them. We miss out on them because we don't plant them at the proper time.
Do you want to share any vegetable? I know your husband does the vegetables at your house, right?
Well, no, we do them. But, I mean, all the cool season stuff. You know, we winter over here. And, of course, I don't have in front of me the documentation of what vegetables winter over at what zone. But oftentimes, you know, all those vegetables that you know enjoy cool weather, lettuces, kales, radishes, onions, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, all of those are also cool lovers. And here for us in Zone 7, we plant those in the fall to enjoy. If we don't get them all harvested, we keep them covered. And I want to talk a little bit about row cover in a second. Don't let me forget. We use low tunnels to cover them with that same lightweight row cover, and they winter over and rejuvenate in the spring, and we harvest them again. So, you know, there's many. So any of those cool season vegetables that you know you plant either in the fall or in very early spring, you know, you need to experiment with them. And I'm glad to hear about that you saw some row cover. And I, again, agree with you that most often the practical application information is what's missing most often with a lot of these supplies that you hear about, but you don't ever know how to, like, make it work in your place. And we try to offer that. Row cover, I can't believe you don't have row cover, Jackie. I almost want to send you some.
No, I told my husband, I just told him this morning, I was like, you know what? We have Amazon Prime this month. I'm going to order it probably, and we'll just get it. And he said, well, where are we going to store it? And we figured out where we're going to put it and everything.
So it's amazing. It'll change your gardening life. It is reusable over and over again if you take care of it and don't leave it, you know, piled up out in the garden, because UV rays can break it down. It certainly is not as heavy duty as it used to be 10 years ago. I mean, I used to get it to last 10 years. Now it doesn't last quite that long. But people underestimate the power of a row cover. We use Ag 19, which is a 4-degree protection. But in addition to giving you 4 degrees of protection, what's even more important is the wind protection that it provides.
Wait, can you back up just a sec? What do you mean 4-degree protection?
So it'll give you, if it's going to be 32 tonight and you put a row cover on it, that means your plants are only going to be feeling 36.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so this is what I do, because there are some plants that I try to, so there are some hardy annuals that aren't supposed to winter over here for me, but I plant them in the fall anyway, and I just have to give them added protection. The way that I do that is, in addition to covering them once, is I double cover them. So I put 2 layers, and that makes it twice as protective. And so that way I don't have to buy a bunch of different weight row covers. The one that we use, Ag 19, which is the 4-degree, 85% of air, water, and light pass through that cloth. So you can leave it on during the day. We hoop it, just use simple wire or flexible half-inch PVC to make some little low hoops. Throw your row cover over it, use some rocks to hold, weight it down, and you've got this little mini greenhouse going for basically the most expensive way you could do it. I mean, it's virtually the cost of the row cover is all that typically most people have to invest in, and it's amazing what it'll do for your garden.
I know. I've learned so much just since I started this podcast in February. I know my husband's known a lot of it, but for me, I've learned a ton.
Yeah. So it's all about just learning. So a row cover is just one of those tools that you can use to extend your garden season, both early and later into the fall. But we use those low tunnels all winter long, just leave them up. And it just lets your plants exist without having to face the brutal elements of winter. And so you get blooms earlier or fruit earlier. So it's pretty amazing. I definitely try to winter over some lettuce up there where you are, lettuce and kale with row cover and hoops. I bet you can eat it all winter. But I guess you get a ton of snow up there.
You never know. I mean, we've had as many brown Christmases as white Christmases where the lawns
really?
Just... Yeah,
really?
I mean, I think maybe a few more, but yeah. I mean, and then other years we have a ton of snow. And like our season, I was thinking when you were talking about what's our spring frost like to me, the biggest thing I've learned is that if we can get a huge dump of snow early in October, November... before the ground freezes hard. If the ground freezes hard before we get that first dump of snow, our spring is just hard. It's just so much harsher. The road takes forever to thaw. It's way easier and it's way longer before you can get in the ground. So that's always the big tip off to me. If we can get a big dump of snow like early October or early November or late October, early November, that's where the big difference is going to be in the following year. And then also it just, it seems to soak into the ground more in the spring. This year's just been so crazy because we practically thawed in February and had dirt in March. It's been unprecedented.
Really?
Yeah. And that's part of why I was telling you in the pre-interview part. Yeah, we're having the worst wildfire season. I mean, one of the worst. It's just a miracle we have rain today. And they got rain in other parts of the state this weekend. But yeah, we had smoke so bad on Thursday and Friday, you couldn't breathe in my valley.
Oh my goodness.
There's a whole camp of there's 200 firefighters 6 miles from my house just camped out. I mean, it's just a miracle that they're there in tents, and it's just a huge city of people working so hard, and they've done an amazing job. Yeah, and two other parts of our state. I mean, actually, Cavita Bay was, I think, episode 14 or 15. She sells honey down south of me, and they had to actually evacuate. They had to move the bees and their horses and everything, and it's been a tough year. And then I know some other people where I taught that had to evacuate on the other side of the mountains. Yeah, it's been... Because you could tell back in February, I mean, just started out dry and we never got any rain. In June, we usually have rain and we had 100 degrees. It's unheard of. I mean, the heat this year and the drought.
Wow.
So we're all hoping for an early fall.
Yeah.
Early winter.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess the other key thing for folks that want to try that very early spring planting, which is really outlined in Cool Flowers, is... You know, you're not going to be able to get out there and dig in very early spring. Usually the ground is wet, still cold. You know, it's not very easy to work soil that's in that condition. What we do is right now we go out and we're preparing beds that we just cover with mulch for the winter that we'll be able to go out there, you know, next year, 6 to 8 weeks before that last frost date. This year was a great example of that. Prepared our beds for spring, really early spring planting a year ago, last fall. And, you know, for us to have snow in March is unusual. I mean, we just don't usually get it. Well, we have 12 inches of snow at the 1st of March. And so all of our beds were out there ready and made. So as soon as the snow started melting a little bit, we were able just to push the snow off the beds and plant our transplants right into the snow, which of course would then melt to water them. And we had some of the best crops of hardy annuals that were planted under those circumstances. However, if we hadn't prepared the beds the fall before that, like now, for next spring, we had never been able to do that. So, you know, now I know it's dry, so that'd be tough to do. We're fighting that same problem here, is it's hard to get out there and dig when it's a dust bowl and prepare. But the reward is next early spring, you get to pull back, push the snow aside, or pull your mulch back if it happens to not be any snow load, and plant these plants that thrive in cool weather, cold soil circumstances.
Do you plant sunflowers?
Excuse me?
Do you plant sunflowers?
Sunflowers? Yeah, we plant sunflowers, our tender annuals, just like tomatoes, cucumbers. You know, hardy annuals survive cold. Tender annuals have to have it warm, which sunflowers are. And we plant 1,000 sunflowers a week for 26 weeks here. I mean, they're a big crop for us for cut flowers. And so, yes, we do plant them on a regular basis here.
Now, then do you let any of those go to seed and collect those seeds?
No.
You don't collect any seed. That's right. Sorry.
No, that's just a whole nother industry. Collecting seeds, first off, we do grow a lot of hybrids here. You know, like I was going to say, the sunflower that we grow is called ProCuts. And the reason we grow ProCuts is it's from seed to bloom is only 55 to 60 days, which is really quick. It's a pollenless variety, which means it lasts a lot longer in a vase. However, it does still produce nectar. So it still feeds our tons of bees that we have here.
Okay, I was wondering about that. Yeah, and then maybe, do you have some tips for putting flowers? Because I noticed my sunflowers didn't last like 3 days.
You mean after you cut them?
Yeah, maybe I cut them too late.
Well, I mean, a lot of things can attribute to that. One is the variety you're growing. Unless you're buying pollenless seeds like we do and that we sell, they typically don't have a long vase life. When they don't produce pollen, it increases their vase life greatly. So variety selection is important if you're trying to cut flowers and use them as cut flowers. And then also we cut them just as they start to open, so that the quality of the bloom is better and it doesn't get wind blown and dried out so that the petals fall off prematurely. So variety selection and the stage that you cut them in make a huge difference. A pollenless sunflower will typically last a couple of weeks in a vase easily.
Ooh.
Easily. And so we just love Pro Cuts. There's a lot of great cut flower sunflowers out there, but we have so far had just for several years grown them, and they're quick. They're beautiful. They've got stiff necks. They last a long time in the vase. And we have no shortage. If you go, we have a Facebook page, Gardener's Workshop Farm. And, I mean, my sister named me a champion Facebook poster yesterday because I do post a lot to Facebook on our business page because I take pictures all day long. You know, of course, I have a smartphone in my pocket, and I'm constantly taking photographs. Particularly, we're strong pollinator people here. We have tons of native bees, as well as we have 19 hives right next door that are always in our garden. And so we're always posting lots of photos. Back a couple of weeks, I guess it was, I posted photos of some of our pollenless sunflowers, and you've never seen so many bees on one sunflower. They were just loaded with bumblebees and honeybees and native bees. And so we grow a lot of sunflowers here. And we let some go to seed for the finches, but we don't ever collect seed.
Can I ask you a question not related to gardening, but more about the taking the pictures on your phone? Because my biggest problem is I run out of storage. Now, granted, my phone storage, probably 90% of it goes to podcasting, but I'm, you know, but pictures too. And I just, what do you do to,
well,
do you download
I'm
them every
telling
night?
You, that what used to be a problem for me, but you're now looking at a person that owns a phone that has 128 gigabyte SD card in it. I have a Samsung, I have a Droid phone, and, I, too, had that storage problem. First, you know, I bought, I think most phones come with an 8 gigabyte SD card.
Yeah, that's
card.
Right. Well, I don't know.
And so you fill that up in the blink of an eye.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if you're taking pictures like I do and videos, I mean, I'm constantly taking little short videos because, you know, of course, in addition to our Gardener's Workshop Farm Facebook page, we also have the Farm Dog Babs Facebook page, which is our famous golden retriever who has such a following of people. She had to have her own page because she was clogging up our farm page with her pictures. So, yeah, I mean, Babs is, I mean, she's in Cool Flowers. She's like page 6 or something in there. And so I'm constantly taking pictures and little short videos of her. And since I put that 128 gigabyte card, that now allows me to take gobs of photos, and then you have to keep young people around in your operation so they can tell you how to do this stuff. And I now know how to stick that SD card into my desktop and download it and empty it I can start over again. So, yes, that is really a big problem. You just have to get your storage issue. You want it to save to your SD card, not to your phone. And that way you can take it out, put it in your desktop and download it and then clean it off and then put it back in your phone, which I don't have to do that but about once a month because I have so much storage.
Nice. Okay, yeah, that was worth it. I'll bet listeners like that tip too.
And I am not a computer person. Let me tell you, it's because I keep young people around. They just tell me how to do what I have to do. But yeah, great photo ops when you have that phone in your pocket all the time. I've been recently posting on Facebook some photos of some beneficial insects in our garden, assassin bugs, and a couple of great pictures of those. I mean, these guys could have a movie. You know, they're so weird looking. And so anyway, it's great to be able to do that. And we love taking photos here.
I almost welled up thinking you are such a great educator and so on it. And that's what everybody's talking about. If I hear one more podcaster say native Facebook video, put native Facebook videos out there, like, and you're right on top of it, but posting beneficial insect pictures because people don't know. And what a great way to teach everybody. And they can just go there quick and everybody go to Lisa's Facebook pages.
And it's what is really great is I don't have time to sit down and look up what these bugs' really name really is. Mm-hmm. So I just post it and say, what is this? Oh, my goodness. And we have all these great master gardeners that just chime right in and tell you the Latin name and what they do and how they do it. And it benefits everybody. So you're right. And people don't understand. You know, there is a reason that there are movies made about bugs because it is a fascinating world out there. And what's going on. And I won't bore you with the projects that I'm working on now, but there are stories and books to be written about the creatures in the garden and how they relate to one another. And it's just really fascinating to me. And I wished I'd have been the real name's an entomologist, but I'd love to be a bugologist. I wished I could go back 20 years. But I enjoy insects and creatures and wildlife. And, and we're really challenged here because, as I said, I'm in the middle of a city. There's nowhere for them to go. And so we take great pride and joy in providing a place for a lot of these guys, birds, right on down to microorganisms to live.
Excellent. And, you know, I've been hearing from a lot of urban gardeners, so I think they're going to like this a lot. And I was going to tell you, a lot of my listeners are in California.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, they're all over, but the majority, I think my number one state is Montana, but my second biggest state of listeners is California. And then the rest of them are all spread out.
Sure. And, you know, that's so funny that we have a lot of customers in California.
Well, that's a big
and
state.
It happened for us because we were in the newspaper there a couple of times. With a story that was done locally that went on the Associated Press and went out there. And so California is very similar to us here in Virginia in our weather is, you know, certain areas of it. So Cool Flowers really opens the door for folks to rethink things. And, you know, the most common thing, especially because I do a lot of speaking to flower farmer groups, conference, you know, for growers. And I get these replies from growers that say, I am rethinking everything now. And that's the biggest compliment that I can receive on my book. It's not that you've learned that, you know, how to grow the greatest flower on the planet, snapdragons, which I love the flower I'm with, so I'm very fickle. But snapdragons are the most underestimated, hardy. They would winter over for you, by the way. They're hardy to zone 4.
I'm not surprised because they come up a lot all over.
Yes. But, you know, to learn that you just have to stop thinking like a retail cycle. You know, stop thinking when you see the flowers for sale. We got to think outside of that box and think back to the way they were meant to grow. And once you wrap your noggin around that, I'm telling you, there's nothing you can't grow. You know, the South, they tell us we can't grow delphiniums. Of course, you can grow delphiniums because you're up north. But those of us in the South, we can grow amazing delphiniums. When we treat the delphinium, which is a perennial for you, we treat it as a hardy annual down here. We know that August is going to choke it to death and kill it. So we plant it in the fall. It winters over. It blooms like crazy in June and a little bit of July. And then we know we're going to just pull it out. Not let it die a slow death in August. Just pull it out and move on and plant it again in September or October. So it's, you just have to think outside your box, and you know, it just changes the world of gardening. It just changes. I mean, your winter, for those folks in California, they're like us. We spend all winter at the window watching everything freeze and be cold and maybe have snow on it, just wondering if those plants that we planted in the fall are going to survive, wondering and waiting. The anticipation that ramps up in your body because of that makes spring even more explosive. It's just amazing, really.
Mm-hmm. I haven't done that, but...
Yeah. You ought to try some snaps. It may be... I mean, you have to have plants to plant 6 to 8 weeks before your first frost date. So it's too late, I think, for you. Unless you can go out and buy some plants somewhere, which I doubt highly. But do you think about that for next fall? Think of a spot, plant them, and the quality, the benefit of doing that is they bloom earlier, they bloom longer, and the quality of the plants, taller stems, less maintenance needed just because they're so well established.
Cool. Okay. All right. Next year. Oh, I'm too late already.
Well, Figures. Your first frost is right around the corner, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it could be. Yeah.
I mean, if you started seeds today inside, it would take 4 to 6 weeks to get a plant, and by then you'd probably be in deep cold, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So you have to, you know, and so just think about if you'd have started this 6 weeks ago through the suffering of this hot and dry summer, you know, seeds are started indoors. It gives you a great activity to do. For us down here in the South, I mean, who wants to go outside in August? Well, nobody, because it's 100 degrees. But what better thing to be doing than starting seeds indoors to have plants to plant out once, you know, September and October come for us. But for you, you back it up even a little bit more. And so, yeah, it changes everything.
Wait, can I ask you a question? And this
sure.
is, people are going to be like, how can this lady have a gardening podcast? Why do you have to start them indoors in the summer?
Well, because some seeds, as in, you know, there's a whole chapter on seed starting in Cool Flowers, and the basic concept of seed starting is there are three groups of seeds, in my opinion. There are those seeds that you really need to start inside. They just don't do well when you plant the seeds outdoors, period. That's a small group, but there are those. Snapdragons happen to be in that group.
All right, I do think group, I remember reading that.
And then the second group are those seeds that prefer to be planted outdoors. The third group goes either way. We always start seeds indoors for that first group and the third group. It's just easier. It's easier to get a better stand of plants when you walk out to a garden and put plants in the ground versus putting seeds in the ground. So we always start seeds. On our website, there's a little, we have a how-to area, and there's a little video clip of how we start seeds called Soil Block, and the way the English have done it forever, and it's just made for home gardeners. It takes up little space. It's so much easier. You'll be more successful. It's the way I've started seeds for 20 years, and it makes seeds, it will revolutionize your seed starting life, because all of a sudden, if you're using peat pots or flats and not having good luck, you're a member of the majority of people. Those are not conducive vehicles to do great seed starting in. Soil blocks, which don't have any container, you just have a little tool that makes them, just really, I mean, you'll be a success. That's what happened to me 20 years ago. I mean, I'm preaching, but it's amazing. That's the number one thing that I teach on is seed starting now. And because so many people want to do it, so many people have failed, including commercial growers, and just learning a few facts really clears that up and lets you be successful. So by going out to the garden and planting plants, you get more success than planting seeds overall. In the commercial world, we always choose transplants because of that. So there is an easy way to start seeds.
Okay. I'll have to reread that chapter. All right. Anything else?
Well, I just really appreciate you having me on, and
You coming on and sharing with my audience. And I know listeners are really going to be inspired. I hope everybody buys your book. It's totally worth every penny.
Well, it's more, it's, I guess you could say that it does, it's focused on hardy annuals, but I also cover how we recommend starting your garden organically, getting your soil ready, starting seeds, how to set it up for low maintenance, and all of those chapters can be applied to every kind of flower or vegetable or herb you're growing. So it is a little bit more universal in that area. And another really big part that a lot of people miss, and I'm getting ready to go do lectures, I'm in Pennsylvania and North Carolina and a lot of different places, that's based on cool flowers, but it's the contribution that cool flowers make in restoring pollinators. And it's because when are the pollinators the most desperate? In very early spring when there's very few flowers for them to live off of. And that's what cool flowers addresses. So there's a little bit in cool flowers about that. But practicing cool flowers in your garden will bring pollinators and beneficial insects into your garden earlier in the season and will let create an environment where they want to stay and have babies and, you know, raise their families in your garden. And if you're a vegetable grower and you aren't designating 20% of space to flowers, you're going to wonder why you don't have pollinators in your garden. Why would pollinators come to your garden if you're not growing what they need to live and raise a family in? And I'm doing Mother Earth News up in Pennsylvania in a couple weeks and Monticello in a week, and that's what we're talking about, is how to get the good bugs in early, and cool flowers is the welcoming, the red carpet that you can roll out for them. And so that's a big one that a lot of people miss. Lots of people's no chemicals, no pesticides, and give them flowers, and you will be overrun with bumblebees, native bees, moths, wasps, all these good guys we want in our gardens.
Yeah, you know, I gotta say, we've had way more bees. Like, even though we got honeybees, I'm still seeing way more bumblebees and bees. Mike's always like, that's not one of my bees. That's not one of my bees.
Right,
and
right.
We do see his bees, but also, you know, you can see there's just tons of different bees with all the extra flowers we've planted this
year.
Sure,
sure. Well, good.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you so much.
It's
an honor to talk to you.
Well, I appreciate it, and we'll have to talk about a different topic some other time, maybe organic gardening or cut flowers, a summer garden or something else. So I'd love to come back and talk to you some more.
Okay. Have a good day.
Thank you, Jackie.
Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to check out our website, organicgardenerpodcast.com. That's just organicgardenerpodcast.com. And you'll see the links to everything that we've talked about today in the show notes page and all the other episodes there. You can easily search for people by name. You can download our ebook on organic gardening basics and subscribe to our newsletter for updates and just different things that are going on. Thanks for listening. And remember to grow.